Cherry Hill Volvo, we have absolutely incredible offers and a plethora of both new and certified Volvos from which to choose. We are eager to offer amazingly competitive prices, plus an additional $1,000 Costco discount on all new Cherry Hill Volvos. When leasing or purchasing a new or certified Cherry Hill Volvo, you become a valued part of our team. Join Cherry Hill Volvo for the pricing and attention you deserve. I am Judith Krupnik, president of Cherry Hill Volvo.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
WOGL HD3, Philadelphia. From the Cherry Hill Volvo Studios, where relationships matter. Always live on the free Odyssey app. The revolution will be broadcast. This is the next generation of talk. Now, this is the drive at 5. 30 minutes of nonstop talk with Rich Cioli.
As the situation in the Middle East continues, Peter Doocy called out John Kirby for the administration giving Iran lots and lots of cash. What will happen next? What will Israel do? Welcome back. Glad you're here today. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. I normally would play her walk-up music, but since it's 5 o'clock, the 5 o'clock happy hour brought to you by our friends at the Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey, my happy place, which will be live on Friday, May 3rd for our first live show of the year, and then Friday, June 21st for a live show. I want to just welcome to the show Dr. Victoria Coates. She, of course, is President Donald Trump's former Deputy National Security Advisor, and she is the current Vice President of the Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, Philadelphia's own. Hello, Dr. Coates, and thanks for joining me at 5 o'clock.
Hi, Rich. Well, thanks for having me on. We had an eventful weekend, so lots to discuss.
We certainly did. Now, what do you make, first of all, of the story that was in the Jerusalem Post of the United States vis-a-vis Turkey, knowing what Iran was going to do and kind of signing off on this and going from there?
Yeah, there was a lot of sort of choreography that went on before the event where the Turks were informed, some of Iran's Gulf neighbors were informed, apparently. The Iranians with whom the administration has been playing post office, they've been sending each other notes, communicated through the government of Oman that this would happen. The Israelis seemed pretty clear it was going to happen, and they moved assets and, you know, got themselves ready, had their Air Force aloft. So I think that was definitely the case, which shows you the Iranians were not going for a mass casualty event, and that is good. And I've heard a lot of folks say, well, they don't really want to escalate. This was just symbolic. So as President Biden said to Prime Minister Netanyahu, the Israelis can just take the win here and really don't need to do anything else. But I think that would actually be a potentially catastrophic mistake, because what the Iranians did do in terms of launching 300 projectiles, including 100 ballistic missiles, at Israel proper, from Iran proper, is a game changer. And if that is allowed to just pass, that's okay. That's now acceptable. That's status quo. And while Israel will hopefully shoot them all down, well, then Israel needs to be right 100% of the time, and they just need to get lucky once. And there's no doubt in my mind that they'll try this again.
Now, Israel is saying it's going to respond. What do you think happens from here? I mean, where do we go from here? If Israel does respond, what happens with Russia? What happens with China? And where could this go?
Well, if I were advising the Israelis, I would also advise them to avoid a mass casualty episode, which could lead to, you know, uncontrollable escalation, but that they need to demonstrate they have a capacity that the Iranians don't have. So they need a successful strike on a major target. Now, that doesn't have to be, as I said, a civilian population center. That's much more the style of Hamas and Iran's proxies. But if they went after a military installation, an oil facility, the way the Iranians did after the Saudi refinery in Abu Qaiq in 2019, and really inflicted some damage that cost the Iranians an important capacity, I think that would be the appropriate response. So the Iranians will pay a price that the Israelis did not pay, but it was not, you know, a World War III style starting activity. So if you do that and you say to the Iranians, this is you don't do that again. And, you know, you've got to get them to stop and not tell them they're going to get a hall pass for this.
And didn't Reagan do something similar to that by going after oil fields or something?
Yeah, it was really more maritime assets. It was Operation Praying Mantis, and I believe 1986. And what had happened is the Iranians had mined the Straits of Hormuz to prevent energy from getting in and out. And, you know, the reality was in 1986, we had to have that oil. We were importing a lot of it at that time. And also, it's obviously 40% of the world's energy supply. So markets were going to be in terrible disruption. And Reagan went in and took some very strong actions against the Iranian Navy, and they backed down. And the oil flowed. We're in a very different position right now. It still would be a bad thing to close the strait. But, you know, at the same time, you could argue it would be good for business. But the lesson from that is that you need to be strong with them in a way that they are clear they are going to take consequences, and otherwise they just keep going.
Now, I know you're going to be on Fox Business after you conclude this interview with me. So, I mean, thank you for making time for it. You also have an op-ed over at foxnews.com, and you say you wrote this along with Congressman Chip Roy. Biden's moral equivalency between Israel and the Palestinians will result in failure again. The House passed funding for Israel, and senators must demand it be approved to show our support. Now, I heard Senator Rand Paul say earlier today that this is the kind of thing, I mean, Israel will pay us back. It's not like we have to worry about not having the money for this. This is one of those things where, you know, he could be for it because even though he doesn't like foreign aid generally, this is a thing where Israel will eventually pay us back. But you have a lot of people in the Democrat Party. Oh, sorry, were you going to say something on that?
No. Go ahead. I hear the rest of your thought.
I was just going to say, but there are a lot of people in the Democrat Party that like Bernie Sanders, I mean, standing up there and saying not another dime for Israel.
Right. And that's where you're seeing the actual very clear divide between the progressives and the normal people in the Senate, which, you know, Senator Paul is obviously a rational human being. And I think when he sees this is an emergency. He knows that part of the reason this cash infusion is necessary for Israel in dollars right now is that to keep their sort of stream of munitions flowing, they have to. This is one of the problems with our defense industrial base. We can get into it another day. What Taiwan was telling us about it when we were there in February. They have to prime the pump with so much cash up front, and then they have to carry the costs of that cash for the however long it's going to take the producing entity to fulfill their order. That's the way the system's rigged right now. So the Israelis need this cash so that they can pay, you know, say Raytheon for David Sling and Arrow 2 and 3 interceptors up front, so that those will be flowing to them in September, October, if they need to have them. So this is not an irrational request. It's a reasonable amount, $14.3 billion. It will be spent here, which is good. I wish it didn't have to be spent at all, but if it does, it's good to have it spent here. And as you say, the Israelis will make every effort to pay us back. They also will cooperate with us extensively on intelligence and other operations. So there are other means they have to make good on that. And it's really encouraging to hear Senator Paul say that.
Now, in your piece with Congressman Chip Roy, you also talk about, first of all, gone is the condemnation of Hamas's barbaric attacks on October 7th as terrorist outrages against humanity, a condemnation that apparently prompted Russia and China to veto the Biden version. And this 2728 resolution calls for the release of the hostages, but it removes language making any ceasefire contingent on their release. Now, where does all that stand with this UN Security Council resolution and the hostages? Because we don't hear a lot about the hostages right now, as Joe Biden's claiming to stand with Israel.
Right. And that's actually where Chip and I started with this op-ed is, you know, when 3 weeks ago the United States abstained on 2728. So we didn't stop it from going through the United Nations Security Council. And there are lots of examples. Well, three, notably, one going back to Condoleezza Rice and the Bush administration when she abstained on 860. I get these all confused. At the end, in 2009, I think she was hoping to deliver a peace deal for President Bush at the tail end of his tenure. So she let that go through. Terrible precedent. And an abstention at the United Nations, given its makeup, is exactly the same as an affirmative vote. They try to use it as cover. It's not. The Obama administration did it with 2334, which is a condemnation of settlements. And in a new twist, the Biden folk actually offered their own version of 2728. But they, as you said, linked, you have to get the hostages out before we'll talk about a ceasefire. And the Russians and the Chinese vetoed that. And they vetoed it because it also condemned Hamas for being terrorists. So all that came out. And so by abstaining on 2728, the Biden administration opened the door for Hamas to keep the hostages and to get a ceasefire. Mm-hmm. First time that's been on the table for them. So how that isn't in legitimizing of their October 7th tactics, I don't see how it can't be. But that's what they did materially to Israel just 3 weeks ago. And so they can wrap themselves in the Israeli flag now and talk about how strong they were over the weekend. But that's not consistent with their actions.
And Dr. Victoria Coates, is that part of the reason why you think people like, I mean, John Fetterman, Senator John Fetterman, coming out and saying he's breaking with the Biden administration here. He wants to stand with Israel.
Now, I mean, Rich, you might need to send the medics for me, but I agree with everything Senator Fetterman has said about Israel in recent months. He has been terrific on Twitter. I saw both Senator Cruz and Congressman Roy retweeted when he rebutted the New York Times op-ed about having conditions on aid to Israel, saying no conditions. That is a great thing for him to say. Now, I need Senator Fetterman and maybe Senator Jackie Rosen from Nevada, who purports to be a great supporter of Israel. They need to go and pressure Chuck Schumer to bring the legislation they have on the floor in the Senate. They've had it since November, and they could demand that the Senate Majority Leader bring that up for a vote and vote for it. Now, one of the things Congressman Roy allowed for in this op-ed, which was a concession for him, I mean, he had the crazy thought in November that since it was a manageable amount, we should actually pay for it and not just have it be more debt for our kids and grandkids. But I think given the crisis, given what happened over the weekend, he's come to the conclusion that, you know, this is actually an emergency. Right. Unlike the border, unlike Ukraine, this is an emergency. Let's get this done. So he's willing to concede that point to get this vote. And, you know, we get crickets from the Senate Majority Leader.
Speaking of the Senate Majority Leader, Dr. Victoria Coates, have you ever heard a situation where the House sends impeachment articles and the Senate says we may or may not have a trial? I'm pretty sure the Constitution says House impeaches, Senate does the trial. I don't think there's an asterisk there that says if they feel like it.
There is not. And so, you know, as the articles arrive today for Secretary, they've got to take it up. You know, one of my chief lieutenants at the Davis Institute is a woman named Laura Reese, who's just been a warrior on this issue and working closely with the House, getting those articles of impeachment together. And they have to take it up. I mean, yes, they have the majority, so they're not going to get, you know, unless somebody comes to their senses. And again, Senator Fetterman has been saying some interesting things about the border. So maybe he will have a flash of reason here. But unless, you know, some Democrats were willing to vote for it, we're not going to get there. But they have to have they have to do it. As you said, it's in the Constitution.
By the way, John Fetterman, you know what happened is his body double just took over, like in the movie Dave.
I guess.
That's why you're agreeing with him so much.
Well, that could be. But as I said, always with the caveat that I need a vote.
Right.
Any vote. Any material action.
Right. Something concrete. Let's think about now. We're looking at a situation here where this standalone bill on Israeli aid, the Democrats are saying, no, we refuse to do this. We're not going to give you a standalone aid package for Israel. It has to be lumped in together. You and Congressman Chip Roy point out in your piece over at FoxNews.com, you said, last year, a standalone paid-for request for emergency funds for Israel passed the House of Representatives. Similar legislation could be passed again Monday, today, Tuesday. Pro-Israel senators on both sides of the aisle should then insist to be taken up and passed immediately to demonstrate that American support for Israel is indeed ironclad. But I'm already hearing now the cries by saying, but if you don't do Ukraine at the same time, then this sends a message to Russia that they can keep going into and pound Ukraine. And I think people are just saying we just have to separate these two things for the purposes of that. But the White House seems to be drawing, to use the term, a red line in that.
Right. And I mean, these things are now apples and oranges. Ukraine's been going on for more than 2 years, and we have given north of $110 billion. Nobody actually knows the number, Rich. And this is what's so just egregious about this. The administration, after doing the accounting trick with the Pentagon to the tune of, I think, some $3 to $5 billion last summer, where, oh, my gosh, we misvalued the weapons. So we just found another $3 to $5 billion in the sofa. Another $14 billion just shook out of additional expenses that just hadn't been accounted for. So the number may now be well over $120 billion that American taxpayers have generously shared with Ukraine over this 2+ years. This emergency supplemental for Israel would be the first time that we would be allocating these kinds of funds, you know, 6 months into their crisis. So it's not as if we haven't been giving to Ukraine. And the other thing that's been revealed this week is our friends in France, led by Emmanuel Macron, who likes to talk tough on Ukraine. And, you know, his national security advisor said to me at one point this fall, this is a crisis of American leadership. If you guys don't do this, you know, your leadership is in question. Well, guess what was reported in Politico this week? They have made their largest purchases of Russian oil this year. Since the war, they've gone up exponentially this year, buying all the cheap Russian product, keeping Putin in business. That's how much they actually care about Ukraine. So, you know, the thought that then this is an emergency that is beholden on the American people to take on more debt for, while France keeps their economy afloat, keeps their contribution de minimis, and does not make its 2% of GDP. For defense spending under its NATO obligations. You know, that's a situation that can't go on. And I'm sorry if I don't feel the same urgency about Ukraine that I do about Israel, as much as I don't like Putin and I don't want him to keep doing this, but I can't stop it unilaterally.
Yeah. No, look, I think you're exactly right about that. I think a lot of people feel that way, no question about it. Dr. Victoria Coates is with me, former national security advisor to President Donald Trump. What do you make of yesterday that A-15 day of action where all these lunatics are shutting down roadways and bridges? They were trying to shut down 95 in Philadelphia. Some people got arrested by 30th Street Station, City Hall. But what really was the epicenter of it was them shutting down the Golden Gate Bridge, shutting down the Brooklyn Bridge. Do you think anything will happen to all of these brave, brave protesters? And by the way, where is it in the First Amendment that says you have the right to shut down major arterways and disrupt commerce? Because I don't remember seeing that in there.
No, it was just obscene. And don't forget Chicago. They had all those poor people trying to get to O'Hare.
Oh, that's right.
And,
the airport,
you know,
yep.
Get on their flights, dragging their luggage along the side of the road. You think about people trying to, you know, get to pick up their kids, all the things we take for granted. And sure, there could be an act of God like the Key Bridge in Maryland, you know, and one does what one has to do, but not an act of man, not a voluntary act. And I mean, where were the police in all of this? Is this acceptable behavior to them? it makes me think, and this goes more to my idiosyncrasies, but of the guards at the museums when the eco-terrorists are attacking the works of art, and the guards stand back. They won't let people intervene. They like that policy. They've been given instructions. Is that the case with the police in these obviously very liberal jurisdictions? That no, it's okay. Don't disrupt this. This is legitimate behavior. And think about what it's costing people. It's egregious. And you know the fact that they are allowed to burn the American flag. You know that's what Scalia said in one of his judgments. That is an acceptable form of speech, as much as he hated it. They're allowed to chant "Death to America," but we don't have to like it. We don't have to encourage it.
So there
is apparently almost no coverage of this on the major networks. Surprise, surprise. But if this continues, it's going to start to get much more local attention. And, you know, people are going to really start to notice.
I hate that. I mean, I don't care. Even if I agree with your cause, if you make me late, I hate you. And Scott Pressler had a great point. He said Republicans should take out registration forms and go to every single driver who's stuck in traffic because of these idiots and get them to register as Republicans. I know they don't care about winning hearts and minds. It's not what these spoiled little brats are doing. They're trying to disrupt capitalism. They're trying to shut it down. But man, I mean, there's nothing that irritates people more than sitting in traffic when they have to go get their kids or catch a flight or go to a doctor's appointment or just go home after a long day at work. And it's the most infuriating thing. And I love how in Miami they try to do this. They got arrested immediately. Ron DeSantis says, you know, we don't play that game here. OK, you're not doing that here.
No. And the sky didn't fall and they didn't go on a shooting rampage or anything like that. So I think Governor DeSantis did absolutely 100% the right thing, which is say there's zero tolerance for this nonsense. It is, you know, not covered under your First Amendment rights. I would liken it to saying, you know, screaming fire in a movie house. If there is no fire, you're taking an unreasonable action. And so I think within that context, you know, that there has to be a growing silent majority in the United States who, even if they don't want to say publicly for whatever reason, you know, you're an Arab American. Everybody's saying how much they love the Palestinians and all of this. You don't want to say it publicly, but you've got to be looking at this and saying, you know, I've got a business and my customers couldn't get to my business this afternoon. You know, they couldn't make their appointments. They couldn't pick up whatever it was. So I didn't get paid. And at what point is the Palestinian cause not worth it?
All right. Now, I have to ask you last question before I let you go on Fox Business. And it's something we talked about earlier.
Oh, that actually got pushed to next week because we couldn't get a good signal here.
Oh, okay. No problem. And the question is this, Dr. Viturcoach, you were the Deputy National Security Advisor of the president. You also were very high up in the Energy Department. And you're the Vice President of Foreign Policy of the Davis Foundation at the Heritage Foundation. But are you also a survivor of glaring? Have you ever been glared at before?
Well, you know, looks can be violent.
Yes. Yes.
You know, and you know, it can be a kind of visual assault.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So, you know, glaring, you know, we can't take this too seriously.
Right.
And, you know, the glare is in the eye of the receiver.
Mm-hmm.
So you might just be, I might be thinking about a difficult topic and happen to look at you. But I have to police myself better than that.
Yeah.
I need to realize that might make somebody feel uncomfortable.
The trauma that Maggie Haberman experienced in court yesterday, and we have the audio here, Dr. Coates, if we could. And we're setting up a group called Glare, which is we're going to try to do like a survivors group to get through this. And she and Caitlin Collins will hopefully speak before the group at some point. But here, take a listen.
You were actually in the room for that. At one point, the pool said that he was glaring at you for several seconds. You had reported shortly before that during a break that he appeared to be falling asleep at one point as the proceedings were getting kind of tedious. Did you notice that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I noticed it. He made a pretty specific stare at me and walked out of the room.
I've been on the receiving end of said glares.
I know you have.
She knows because they're in therapy together. Dr. Victoria Coates, I've been glaring at Matt DeSantis all afternoon and Henry
to try to break them down.
Yeah. Listen, my friend, thank you very much. I appreciate your time. I know we're going to be talking a lot later, probably this week. So all my best to you. You're in high demand. So thanks for making the time.
Thank you very much. Take care, guys.
All right.
It's the 5 o'clock happy hour on the Rich Zeoli Show. Brought to you by the Oceanfront Grand Hotel of Cape May, New Jersey. A premier full-service resort and conference center. GrandHotelCapeMay.com.
And the big story of the day is the glaring issue, brought to you by Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. He's a great guy with two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Sid points out a lot of great guests today, but I hope you have time to bust the chops of Matt DeSantis and Henry. Best part of the show. I did bust your chops earlier. We had a whole segment about the glaring.
There was plenty of busting.
Sid was out in the parking lot smoking ganja again in Mystic. Sid, hit the rewind on the Odyssey app. There was a whole segment on when I busted their chops about their glares. Whole segment you missed. Pay attention, man. Come
on. Sid cracks me up. Everything he tweets is funny.
It really is. It's just great. It truly is. But we've had a lot of guests. We have a lot of serious topics. It's just a very busy day. We go where the news cycle goes, all right? Can't all be yucks. I'm sorry. What? And Natural Lawn of America is going to help you get greener grass with fewer weeds, guaranteed. And that's why I'm so happy that I use them year after year after year. Natural Lawn of America. They are first rate when it comes to creating green lawns quickly, more naturally, and with fewer weeds. For over 35 years, their certified specialists tailor their treatments to your lawn's specific needs. This environmentally friendly approach reduces the need for chemicals and creates a safer lawn for your family and pets. And Natural Lawn has a great offer for you. New customers, they will seed your lawn for free. That's right. Just call them at 1-800-FREE-SEED or visit naturallawn.com to learn more. And choose my lawn care company, Natural Lawn of America. You're going to get greener grass, fewer weeds, guaranteed. Safer for your family and pets, that lush, thick green lawn you want. And they will seed your lawn for free every year. Call 1-800-FREE-SEED or visit naturallawn.com.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Zeoli Show on your schedule from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT in the free Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back. The question is diversity, the new religion, of course, as we know. We hear it all the time, 855-839-1210 on Twitter, at Rich Zeoli. Well, Philly Medical School is going to pursue a diverse workforce through scholarships and special programs, but there's some real complications here. Here to talk about it, the associate editor of the College Fix, Matt Lamb, joins me right now on Talk Radio 1210. Matt, thanks for making the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me back on.
So this is Thomas Jefferson University Medical School, which is based in Philadelphia. And what they're looking to do is to increase diversity by having racial minority healthcare professionals who can alleviate health disparity, if I'm getting that correctly.
Right. And they're going to do this through different scholarships and mentoring programs. What's worth noting is that in some ways there's nothing wrong necessarily with, you know, recruiting students, you know, making sure the best students are coming, students that may not think they have a chance to go there. But what gets problematic is if you do illegal scholarships that only go to Black students, let's say, or Hispanic students or female students. That's when it gets legally problematic for the university if they're excluding white students or male students from scholarship opportunities.
And why would they exclude anybody? I mean, isn't the goal of a medical school to have the best people possible so that we can have the best doctors possible?
Well, it's been a while since you've been in college, because actually saying the best person
listen, dude,
to get the job is a microaggression.
Don't age shame me, buddy, all right?
You would think that, but now, of course, with diversity, equity, inclusion, anti-racism, whatever you want to call it, there is a push to have a sufficient amount of racial minorities, even if that means excluding better qualified applicants who happen to be white, let's say. With the Supreme Court's ruling on affirmative action last summer, universities are now figuring out ways that it seems to, you know, get around it. Even Virginia Commonwealth University's medical school was saying that they had to have a, quote, workaround the affirmative action ban. And so this is a problem at many medical schools and many universities in general.
And now, when the dean spoke to a local station in our area, they said, one of the things I intend to do is make the case that we need a diverse workforce and students. And he says it's based on the American Medical Association's view, that a more diverse medical force improves health outcomes. However, the former associate dean of the University of Pennsylvania Medical School questioned those comments, and that's our friend Dr. Stanley Goldfarb, who's chairman of Do No Harm. He said that those studies that the American Medical Association is citing are inconclusive at best, right?
Exactly. They did a comprehensive report on what's called racial concordance or race matching, where a Black doctor works with Black patients. And they found there's really no proof. This continues to be a false claim. Justice Ketanji Jackson echoed this claim in the affirmative action dissent that she wrote. And it's based off misreading a study, several studies. It's too much for me to try to understand or explain. But I trust Dr. Goldfarb, who, as you mentioned, was a dean at, I think, a slightly more prestigious medical school in Philadelphia than Thomas Jefferson University.
I love it. You're calling smack on Thomas Jeff, huh? Yes, he was a dean at Penn, so that's Ivy League. So I guess you'd be fair in saying so.
Right. It's based on this idea that, you know, race matching is beneficial. That would actually work against the interests of Black doctors, because that same study, I believe, found that white newborns had a higher mortality rate when treated by Black doctors. So these results can be manipulated however you'd like, and it would actually undermine the idea of hiring more Black healthcare professionals, because that study could also be read to say that white patients, who are the majority of patients, because the majority of the country is white, do worse off using this method when they're treated by a Black doctor.
Right. Exactly right. And that's why, you know, to say something like this is incredibly problematic for a lot of reasons. And it's signing off on segregation, basically. I mean, the goal here is I'm black. I can only see a black doctor. I'm white. I only see a white doctor. I mean, this is literally what we fought against here. As Dr. Goldfarb said, patients want the best physicians available, no matter what their color and no matter what their ethnicity. And there's also some civil liberties groups, Matt Lamb, that are seeing problems with this as well. Ed Bartlett with Stop Abusive and Violent Environments, which is a civil liberties group. He says that Dr. Ibrahim at Thomas Jefferson would do well to check with his university attorneys to make sure he's not violating federal law. And the university's summer training and enrichment program for underrepresented persons in medicine literally excludes white students.
Exactly. And there's programs like this all across the country. Of course, you know, Mark Perry files a lot of these complaints as well. And so what these universities do is they set up these programs. There are always these fancy names, RISE, Step Up, and it's those silly acronyms that Congress does too. But you know, you cannot exclude on the basis of race or gender. If the university is concerned about not enough racial minorities getting into these programs, they can certainly make the programs larger. They can recruit, you know, at HBCUs or at, you know, minority heavy high schools and or colleges and encourage people to apply, but they cannot exclude on the basis of race, which at least appears to be what Dr. Ibrahim at Thomas Jefferson University is hinting or suggesting they'll do, but the university wouldn't really elaborate when we asked them for comment.
It's racist is what it is. I mean, it's racist. And in the article over at thecollegefix.com, and Matt Lamb's with me, he's the associate editor of thecollegefix.com. This program is in violation of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and there's been complaints filed, and yet, you know, Dr. Goldfarb told the Fix that a fair approach would actually, and a legal one, would be to give scholarships based on economic adversity that students have overcome rather than racial characteristics. I mean, there are a lot of very talented kids who are white who grow up in poor circumstances, just like there are a lot of very talented kids who are black who grow up in economically disadvantaged circumstances. And so that would be the better approach. But it seems as if in this quest for diversity, what we're really going down the road of is exclusion and segregation. We're not adding to diverse ranks. We're turning people away who might be more qualified, and we're going backwards in terms of segregation, where you're saying to a woman can only see a woman doctor, a man can only see a man, a black man can only see a black doctor who's a man. I mean, it's absurd and the opposite of where we're supposed to be, which is that color is blind. But I know that you can't say that anymore. You're not allowed to say that color is blind. You shouldn't judge people on the character of their content and not their skin color. That's literally now a trigger. So I don't know how we get around this other than I think it would be wise for people to realize that their doctor may not be the most qualified person to have gone to that medical school, but may have been somebody who was essentially there for diversity reasons. And I don't know. I mean, maybe read the bios, maybe ask for transcripts of their grades. I don't know how patients are going to be able to assess to make sure they're getting the most qualified doctors going forward. And then I also think there's another problem with that, which is that if I'm an extremely qualified black doctor and I'm really good at what I do, I don't want people thinking I just got here because of some diversity initiative.
Right. And this is exactly what Clarence Thomas has talked about before, that he felt that affirmative action hurt him because people assumed he got into law school based off his race. And I think the economic adversity is actually a better way, because I think the disconnect between doctors and their patients is less about race and more about income. I think Malcolm Gladwell has a story in one of his books about a black, upper income, upper class family, and how the child felt more comfortable asking questions to the doctor about different things that were happening versus a lower class white. I think there's a problem in general with medical care, and that doctors do feel that they are superior to their patients. And I think that's reflected more in class and income and education, which may correlate in some ways with race, but isn't obviously the same as race.
Well said. Matt Lamb, Associate Editor, thecollegefix.com. Appreciate it, my friend. Thank you.
Yep.
All right, and as we continue along here in our fourth and final hour, and just a reminder, in a little bit, I'll be turning the reins over to myself as I fill in for the great one, Mark Levin, and we'll take his 6 o'clock hour live starting at 6 o'clock, obviously, because that's the 6 o'clock hour. Just let that go. Please let it go. It's been a long show, and I still have 3 hours and 15 minutes to go. So anyway, all right, listen, I'm going to tell you about my friends at Cherry Hill Volvo, because we're broadcasting live from the Cherry Hill Volvo studios, and I'll be doing Levin Show live from the Cherry Hill Volvo studios. Judith Krupnik stands with all of us here at Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. She's such a great friend, and there has never been a better time to get to Cherry Hill Volvo than right now, because they have their huge renovation extravaganza going on. So look, whenever there's a renovation, yeah, some dust, you know, whatnot. You got a little, and they're working on the road, so a couple detours, but it's nothing bad, really. Honestly, I was just there picking up my new XC60. But because Judith knows it's maybe an extra step involved, she has doubled down on the already aggressive promotions and incentives to ensure that you still have the same luxurious experience you've ever had. That's why they have beautiful trailers, same level of outstanding customer service, but the savings event, the savings opportunity during the renovation, better than ever. They are going to work to find you every possible incentive to get you into a beautiful Volvo. And whether it is a certified pre-owned or brand new or a lease, you will love driving a Volvo from Cherry Hill Volvo, because they stand with us. And they're the region's most accessible Volvo dealership, easy to get to, minutes over the bridge on Route 70 in Cherry Hill. And it's really, the renovation is not a big deal, honestly. So whether it's the S-Class, which is made right in South Carolina, or it's the XC40, a beautiful midsize SUV, the XC60 that I'm driving right now. I told you, cargo space, I had 1,000 pounds of sand in there yesterday. We had to go pick up sand for baby Reagan, well, toddler Reagan, it's her birthday today, her new sandbox, and I had to get 20 bags of 50-pound bags of sand. So 20 50-pound bags of sand. And I loaded into the back of the XC40, no problem. Ton of cargo space. And then Bridget's got the XC90 with that third row for the kids. So go see them today and thank them for standing with us in this age of cancel culture. They doubled down and they became the studio sponsor. Cherry Hill Volvo on Route 70 in Cherry Hill, where relationships matter.
Thanks for listening to the Zioli Show podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the Odyssey app.
All right, welcome back as we conclude our fourth and final hour. Our third and final hour, because I'll be filling in for the great one, Mark Levin, starting at 6 o'clock. So that will be the fourth hour, but it'll be his first hour live in just a few minutes. So I hope you'll stay tuned for that and be with me till 9 o'clock tonight. We'll talk about a lot of things. So there's a question about Speaker Johnson and what's going to happen with him. There's already talk of people who want to see him gone for a number of different reasons. I'm going to play what Rand Paul said about him. He was asked by Maria Bartiromo specifically about Mike Johnson and his support of the warrantless spying on American citizens through FISA. Take a listen to what he said earlier today.
For it.
I want to also ask you about what you heard from the speaker regarding FISA. Can we trust government? Can we trust government to use FISA appropriately and legally?
Absolutely not. Americans shouldn't be spied on by their own government. The Fourth Amendment was put in by our founding fathers to protect us. FISA doesn't obey the Fourth Amendment. And so Speaker Johnson was incredibly wrong. He broke the tie. He voted with the Democrats. Here we have the leader of the Republicans in the House votes with the Democrats against a warrant requirement. We also have Speaker Johnson voting for the spending package, once again, with a majority of the Democrats. As I see it now, I'm not sure there's a difference between Mike Johnson being in charge and the Democrats being in charge. The deficit this year will be $1.5 to $2 trillion, and that's Mike Johnson's bill. He put it forward. He supported it with a minority of Republicans, with a majority of Democrats. This is not using the power of the purse. This is abdicating the power of the purse.
Well, why? Why do you think that is?
You know, people have to be strong in their convictions. He was seen as a conservative before he came to the speakership, but now he puts a tweet out the other day saying, oh, they whispered to him about 702, how important it is, and now he's completely changed and lost all his principles on the idea that we shouldn't spy on Americans without a warrant. On the spending issue, they say, oh, government will shut down. But if the Democrats want this level of spending, we want this level, a compromise would be splitting the difference. The Democrats got everything they want in the spending, and all the hawks got what they want, too. This is a problem. On the Republican side, we have people who want unlimited military spending, and then the Democrats want unlimited welfare spending, and they get both. But Johnson hasn't held his ground. He has power. He has a majority. Use the power of the purse, Speaker Johnson. Do something to make us think you are different than the Democrats. But so far, I don't see a lot of difference.
Wow, all of this.
Now, let me do a couple things here. Number one, he's exactly right about the warrantless spying. You know, Johnson says, I had this classified briefing and I saw things and I said, whoa, we gotta kill the warrant requirement of FISA. But there's always gonna be reasons why we're gonna hear about how our protections from our government need to be suspended in the name of public safety. I mean, that's what tyrants do all the time. They're always gonna take the most extreme examples and say, if you didn't have to have a warrant, this could have been prevented. If we didn't have the Second Amendment, this could have been prevented. If we didn't have a jury trial, OJ would have been found guilty. You know, I mean, they're always going to go to the most extreme examples, but these things are in the Constitution. And it's not like when the country was founded, it was hunky-dory up until 9/11. I mean, the freaking British came over and burned down the White House. And they didn't run back and go, all right, we've got to add an asterisk to the Bill of Rights. This stuff only counts when times are good. If the S hits the fan, all this stuff goes out the window. Or it's all on hold, so you, like a pause button. And then the Fourth Amendment only applies when times are good. When we don't have any threats. We're always going to have threats. There's always going to be bad guys out there. There's always going to be terrorists out there. And now you're the terrorist. We're the terrorist. We're the potential domestic violent extremist with our Cabela's fishing hats and our Bibles and our guns and our bullets and our bow and arrows. I don't know. There's always going to be bad guys. You don't cede on liberty. You don't cede on the Bill of Rights. You don't cede on the Constitution. Every government would love to take away the protections you have from that government. Because, and this is what the founders and the framers of the Constitution were acutely aware of. They were people who studied philosophy and they understood the nature of humanity, which is that power will always try to increase. And whoever has power wants more of it. And when you have power, you have the ability to get more of it. So you have to have restraints so that those in power don't take more of it. And that's why we have the Constitution as the guardrails to keep those in power from getting all the power and controlling everything. Because then you have a dictatorship, then you have tyranny. But the way that they get you to surrender is by scaring you. Well, you know, I mean, I know we can't force this person to speak, but under the Fifth Amendment, but if we can force him to speak, we could save lives. So we got to get rid of that pesky, you have the right to say nothing amendment in the Constitution. I mean, you could do this all day. The left does this all day with the Second Amendment. Do they not? How many times have you heard people say, the Second Amendment, there's no longer a purpose for it. We have to get rid of it. We'd all be safer. And every time there's a shooting, we're told that that amendment serves no purpose. But we know the purpose, and that purpose is to protect us from our government, to protect us from tyranny. You don't think they'd love to get rid of that? You don't think they'd love to be like a country where the people don't have any guns and the government can do whatever the hell it wants to them? People in power love power, and they want more of it. That's just a general nature of humanity. You know, I always tell you, I live in the real world, not the world I want to live in. And maybe it's growing up in this area, you get a little cynical, I guess, about life. Or maybe it's just street smarts. You know, my dad being a cop, he would always tell me, you got to have street smarts. You got to be street smarts. Oh, by the way, I did a podcast with my buddy Tom Azelby. His podcast is called The Old Gravy Podcast. And he and I talked about growing up cop. His dad was an NYPD cop. My dad was a Port Authority cop. And we had a great chat. I'll put out a link to it. But if you want to Google it, it's the Old Gravy Podcast, Growing Up Cop. My buddy Tom Azelby, he's a terrific guy, really bright, one of the brightest guys I know, actually. And he is a part of the Zioli Army, big part of it. And he's got his podcast, so he invited me on it. And I said, let's do it. And we just talked about what it's like to grow up with a dad who's a cop. But being street smart, you understand that everybody who's got power in life wants more of it. And the only reason they don't get more of it in this country is because we have the Constitution in place being the guardrails. And despite the left's histrionics, Trump never tried to absorb more power. He left the White House when he lost. Joe Biden's the one ignoring the courts. Joe Biden's the one telling the middle, giving the middle finger to the Supreme Court over student loan refinancing, this bribe that he's given out to people. And Joe Biden's government is the one that's weaponized and is spying on American citizens and going out there and arresting pro-lifers who pray and ignoring people that shut down bridges and major arteries. So the minute that we abandon our liberty, we're done. All right, look, I gotta get ready for Levin's show, but Dr. Mike Veneria, great guy, great friend, great dentist, the master of dental implants. You got to go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury, right across the bridge. And Dr. Mike is the master of dental implants, the master of making you look your best, giving you the smile of your dreams. When it comes to complicated dental implants, there's simply no one better. If you've had an estimate for complicated dental work, it's worth it to get a second opinion with my buddy, Dr. Mike. So just go see him today. VeneriaDental.com. It's V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VeneriaDental.com. You'll understand, first and foremost, what makes his office so unique. The staff is great. Everybody in there has got a wonderful attitude. They're dedicated to your care. He's got great music playing. And he also is just a great conversationalist. 856-786-2020. 856-786-2020. Or visit VeneriaDental.com. My dentist. My whole family's dentist. Even birthday girl Reagan goes to see Dr. Mike, and the master of dental implants for 10 consecutive years, recognized by his peers as the best of the best. Dr. Mike Veneria, VeneriaDental.com.
Rich Zioli, weekday afternoons 3 to 7, Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and on the free Odyssey app.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.